I'm sure, you know, if you haven't seen the movie The Castle, you would know about it. It's about an Australian family that love their house, even though it's right next to the airport in Melbourne. But one day they're told, well, their house will be compulsorily acquired because the airport wants to be extended and they're going to have to move out. And they don't. They take a stand. Now, it is arguably Australia's most beloved movie. It was featured on a stamp at one point. And I think in a vote, it was voted Australia's favourite film at one point, or you know, the favourite Australian film of all time. So there must be something about that that really hits home to how we feel about our homes. The great Australian dream is to own your own home. Once you buy it, that's yours. You own it all the way up to the sky. What happens, though, if someday, one day, someone just comes along from the government, knocks on your door and say, by the way, thanks very much, we are going to be compulsorily acquiring your house. Now, there might be other things about the castle that maybe it's really a story about the settlement of this country, but that's not what we're talking about this morning. We're talking about compulsorily acquiring homes. How would you feel if you found out that your family home was next in line to be knocked down for a freeway? They've paved paradise and put up a car park. Well, not a car park, but a car road. A road. Or an airport. Or some other important piece of infrastructure, which might be important in the wider scheme of things, but this is your house. You bought it. You own it. Might even be a block of flats. What can you do in that situation when the government comes around and says, well, too bad. Doesn't matter that you own that house. You're going to move out and we're going to knock it down. To talk about it this morning, and we would love to hear your thoughts on this, and maybe if you've been in the situation, and we'll talk about that in a moment, our guest is Anton Dunhill. He is a partner at Hunt & Hunt, which is a national law firm, also head of the Victorian Property Disputes and Compulsory Acquisitions Team in Victoria. Anton, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Rod. How are you?
I'm very well. I will point out, though, before we start, that, of course, any of the things that we're discussing this morning or any advice or whatever is of a general nature only. And, of course, if people are in their own particular situation, they do need to seek specific advice. Not that we are here or that you're here to give advice this morning, but anything that you say, please, I don't want people to say, hang on, I heard Anton say this, therefore that's the case. We just need to make sure that this is of a general nature, even though that we can talk about specific situations, of course. So, Anton, why is it that the government can come and take our property?
Unfortunately, it's a part of modern life these days, and it's not just Australia, it's around the globe. There are slightly different legislation across the globe, but the long and short of it is when you've built up various infrastructure like we have, especially in the major cities, and when you look at the infrastructure in a lot of the Victorian countryside and the like, they need to take land that's been used for another purpose, reusing it for whether it be roads or using it for water pipelines or gas pipelines or any number of different things which need to be built, and essentially there's something in the way, unfortunately.
Where does it say in the Constitution that they can do this?
Well, the right in the Constitution, actually, it does allow for it in the Constitution itself, but more importantly, the Constitution allows for legislation to be enacted. So, for instance, there are two pieces of legislation in Victoria that are particularly important, both in the planning stage and the acquiring stage. So they've been enacted by government. And similarly, there's a national one. So, for instance, I've acted on airport land, much like the castle that you were talking about earlier. Yeah. And when acting on federal property, which is a rarity, but nonetheless it does come up, then I've had to act under the legislation. So basically, somebody actually enacted legislation in Parliament. It was agreed that it would need to have a set code as to how it's to work.
I actually have a copy of the Constitution in front of me. Where does it say that they can do it?
Well, Now you're testing my constitutional.
Okay, all right.
Or,
I'm sure it's there in Section 51 somewhere.
Well, there are references to it. The issue isn't, from my point of view, what we do about constitutionality, much like you saw in the film The Castle.
Yes.
There can be some arguments about planning, and there can be some arguments usually leading up to decisions made by ministers or the like. But in my experience, it's not usually about fighting the project itself or the constitutionality of it.
Right. So
for instance, the argument in The Castle isn't quite how it goes for
no.
For us at this stage.
I can imagine the vibe is a little bit different. But, you know, I hardly believe I'm going to ask this, but was The Castle in some ways an unrealistic view of the law in that generally these things are not fought and won, or once the government decides that it wants to compulsorily acquire something, that's it?
Interestingly, there are a few things that come out of The Castle that, if I hark back to my constitutional law days many, many, many moons ago, I recall that, in fact, the Constitution does have a vibe, like is described in The Castle. So there is, not everything is codified.
Sure.
The whole idea of the Constitution is to set the scene as opposed to specifying every single element. The elements are meant to be set out, whether it's by common law or legislation. However, generally speaking, you can't stop a project once it's gone through the compulsory acquisition process. It's not about getting your land back, but being adequately compensated for it.
Okay.
Adequately is a very big word.
Let's talk about that in just a moment. But there is one aspect, and I know you've done some work on the East-West Link in Melbourne.
Indeed.
Were there houses or was there land compulsorily acquired for that project? I can imagine there would have, because they were, you know, being very keen on starting it. And what happens to those people? Do they get their houses back or are they just sold?
That's a fascinating question, and I'm intimately aware of the issues because I act with more than 30-odd people that have been affected by this. The issue with the compulsory acquisition was a lot of those notices were issued on the 16th of October in 2014, which is pre-election. Mm-hmm. So when the election was held and the decision was actually taken to try and can the project, that couldn't change what had already happened. So much like you've just described, you can't undo the past. What you can do, and what has happened, is that the government's offered buyback options for people. So it is actually possible to buy back their own property, but that is fraught with all manner of difficulty and a few elements of danger, because the way the legislation reads, you're required to buy it back at the market value that it was purchased.
Yeah.
And when I say purchased, I use that term very loosely.
Yes.
So when it's compulsory acquired, there's an assessment as to the market value, and the market value is what they have to pay in order to get it back. Now, that's actually quite complicated. Of course, the market can go up and down. In the meantime, that project area has changed significantly, but we can go into that if you like.
Well, we can talk about it. Let's talk about market value then. Now, the market value of a nice house in a nice suburb is one thing. The market value of a house once a six-lane highway or an airport goes next to it is quite a different thing. So, you know, I would love it if the market value was perhaps what the real estate agent told the seller that they were going to get for it. But I reckon that the market value might be more like telling the buyer what the house is worth. So how do they come up with what the market value is?
Well, actually, you make an interesting point, because these days there's a lot of criticism of the value that buyers are prepared to pay for a variety of properties, especially in Melbourne and Sydney. But you're absolutely right. It's a hypothetical valuation, and I certainly get a lot of clients who talk to me about offers they've had on their property. Problem is, if it's not actually a done deal,
yeah,
it's not necessarily a comparable sale. So from a market value point of view, there are actually tests, and there are legal and valuation principles. And without boring everybody too much about the detail, for example, the way to describe it would be a willing but not anxious vendor selling to a willing but not anxious purchaser.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it's someone who doesn't need to sell but would like to. It's not like they have to sell to be out by the end of the month or something.
Indeed. When we're looking at comparable sales, and this is particularly the purview of a valuer, so I'll engage independent expert valuers to determine what the market value should be, and that may or may not be the same as what the government ascribes to it. When they do that determination, they try to take that hypothetical into account, and they might look at comparable sales where somebody has sold under duress, like for instance,
Yes.
a mortgagee sale. Now, that shouldn't be taken on its face value. We should all think about the fact that a mortgagee sale is probably not going to attract a typical market value.
Okay.
By the same token, someone who sits on the property and looks to sell it over the course of 10 years, which can be quite common in rural properties, it can take years.
Yes.
Then that may or may not be indicative of the market there too. So it is a little bit of art and science when it comes down to the valuation.
Yeah, otherwise they'd get the team from Selling Houses Australia, and which really improves the value of the house. So also, I mean, we constantly hear at the moment in Melbourne, Sydney, elsewhere less so, that we're going through this housing boom. It's a bubble as well that could burst at any moment, we are told. So the house, the price might be artificially inflated in a way, and it's really not worth anything like what someone might be willing to sell it for, or even maybe what someone's willing to buy it for.
It's certainly a problem in the general issue of buying and selling houses, but I must say I've never encountered a problem where a claimant, that is someone who's affected by a compulsory acquisition, has received too much money. I've not encountered too many clients who've said, let's resile from that particular head of claim, because
okay.
there's more than market value we're allowed to claim. But having said that, it can happen where you set up the various different parts of the claim, and it might be that some of it isn't worth pursuing, either because it's not appropriate, or the client doesn't wish to, or we advise that legally it's not suitable to do so.
Okay, so looking at how much a house costs is one thing compared with other sales in the area. That's how they generally do it. But that does not take into account, I suppose, you know, how much you might have complete 100% equity in the house. You might have 10% equity in the house. How much you are given for it varies widely. If you're an older couple that have paid it off, that money may not mean as much as if you are still trying to pay it off. The disturbance of having to find somewhere else out at Badgerys Creek, there are people on farms that are going to have to find other farms to live on, not just a house or an apartment. Then there's all the legal and professional costs. Is that all taken into account?
The short answer is yes. The long answer is
no.
Like the way you might hope.
Right.
So in terms of what's taken into account, when you talk about the market value, the mortgagee will certainly have to be repaid. Now, that's a problem if somebody owns, say, for instance, a $1 million property, which, I mean, it sounds astronomical these days, but I think we all know that a $1 million property doesn't get you too much in the inner city anymore, and when you talk about rural land, not necessarily as well.
Yeah.
So a $1 million property may have a mortgage on it of, say, $800,000, and $200,000 may not be a great deal of money for the person to go and buy a replacement property, but mm-hmm. In addition to the other heads of claim, the 200 grand they get takes into account and assumes that they can go and get another $800,000 loan.
Yeah.
Now, that's not always true because the circumstances can change. And I've had heartbreaking situations where we've had to fight very hard to make it possible for someone to move on because they couldn't get the loan that they previously could. They might have changed, they might be studying now, they may no longer be working, they might be retired, and it may not be possible. And actually, this is as good a forum as any, as I've certainly done before, to call for a bit of change in the law.
Okay.
The law says that the government's allowed to give a low or no interest loan, but it only does so up to the value of $500,000 for the market value of the house.
Right. Oh.
The problem is, if $500,000 doesn't buy too much,
that's right.
They upped that not too long ago, but honestly, I think we need to look at whether that needs to go up again.
Well, maybe they look at the first $500,000.
That's a bit risky because, let's put it in another way, say somebody has the great fortune to be able to buy a $3 million lovely property in the inner city, and
yeah.
We all know $3 million does buy you quite a bit, at least in most places. From their point of view, if they've leveraged themselves to the hilt and they've
yes.
leveraged, you know, at a 10% level or the like, where 90% is loan, the reality is, should they be getting that same kind of free kick as someone else? And I don't envy the legislators to try and figure that out.
Well,
it's not easy.
Yeah, surely. The case is, if somebody compulsorily acquires your home, it doesn't matter how much you paid for it, you are entitled to as much help as possible because somebody has come and taken your home.
Well, I like the fact that you espouse that view, because I think that we should act on just terms as well. Just terms being equity or fairness or the like. That applies to the Commonwealth legislation. Interestingly, it also applies in New South Wales, but in Victoria, we don't have that. So a lot of people will talk about, I need to get what's fair. And unfortunately, the law doesn't talk about what's fair.
It talks about what's just.
Well, in New South Wales and Commonwealth, yes, but in Victoria, for instance, it doesn't. It speaks specifically about market value and the other heads of claim. Now, you talked about professional expenses. There's, for example, solatium, which is a term often bantered about, and it sounds good and exciting, but it's for the intangible, or if you like to call it, pain and suffering.
Yeah, okay.
As a result of this, unfortunately, it's capped at 10% of the market value of the property. Now, that doesn't help you much if the market value isn't the biggest part of your claim.
Mm.
And even if it is, say you've got a $100,000 market value property, that's that's $10,000. If you've got $1 million, that's $100,000, which isn't a huge amount to help with the whole suffering, if you want to call it.
Indeed. Ginny says, elderly ill friends in Victoria was sent a notice of acquisition some years ago. The government does not want it until 2020, but they will be paid the price when the notice was served, not 2020. This is a farm. So that seems very unfair.
The short answer to that is it can be very unfair in some circumstances, and it can be fair in others. Like we said, in Victoria, fairness doesn't actually really read into the legislation. But in terms of what they've done, sometimes that would actually be a benefit to a person. And there are many situations where you're better off with the notice of acquisition at a particular time. But there can be a disadvantage, like that general situation you've just described. I'd have to know a lot more about their individual
sure.
circumstances to know if that actually helps them or not, because it may sound terrible. In some cases, it certainly would be. But in other cases, what you might find is they get to stay on the land for little or no money for all that time, having already been paid so they can find a replacement property. For instance, in rural property, you might find that having a long period of time to find a location that you're satisfied with that works for you is a good thing.
Okay.
The hardship will be the longer you wait, the more likely the property prices will go up, so you'll have less and less buying power.
Okay.
So there are some very complex issues to manage, but it certainly doesn't sound fair. What I'll say about that is that it is also up to the individual planning decisions, because this whole thing follows a process. First, we talk about what we want. We talk about where it's going to be and how, and it goes through planning processes. And then they usually put an overlay over the property. It's a blight, much like a heritage overlay, which most people know. It's called the public acquisition overlay. And that overlay designates that land as one day to be acquired. So she may be referring to that. Alternatively, we could be talking about the notice of acquisition, as you said, that was served. And when that happens, that's the date that you no longer own the property. So it works in reverse to a typical conveyance. You've received that.
Okay.
Your property anymore, but then you can argue about compensation for as long as it takes.
Well, this is to do also with native grasses on this farm, so it sounds like a very complicated. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'm aware of quite a number of overlays that have things to do. There's the in the west there are quite. I won't get too detailed
sure.
here, obviously, but it's there are quite a number of overlays which are about the future and have been, say mark of quite a bit of controversy. The problem is planning and then the execution. And I think that the issue is, has it been executed properly so people have options to do something?
Okay.
Normally, when there's an overlay on your property, you have the ability to do things like sell it and claim the loss on sale that arises from the sale.
Okay. So
in other words, if you sell it and half of it's to go and people will only pay you half of its value, you can claim that extra half.
Right.
Under the legislation, but it's complicated and there are steps and you have to do things in order to be able to make that kind of claim.
Okay, we've got a lot of people who'd like to talk to you. Anton Dunhill is our guest. Just one quick question before we go, which I'm sure is a difficult one. What about something like capital gains tax, that if you buy your house and then, or you know, maybe it's not the house you're living in, but it might be you know, an investment property, and then you sell it, or the government acquires it, you know, and it's gone up in value. What happens? Do you just still normally pay capital gains tax on that?
There's a provision for capital gains tax rollover relief. It really depends on the individual circumstances, whether you have a capital gain and how you can roll it over if you're allowed to. But that's why we look at the specific circumstances. So for instance, in my firm, we've got tax guys who are terrific at doing this, and they figure out the individual's ability to roll over the capital gain, which means you ultimately pay it, well, in most circumstances, but you pay it on the sale of the next property. That's the loose way of explaining how that works.
Alex points out also, when I did a real estate course a few years ago, I was taught only governments could do valuations. Real estate agents did market appraisals, and that's probably a fair way of looking at it. Ken is with us. Good morning, Ken.
Okay. My way of looking at it is that they shouldn't be giving you a monetary value for your property. They should be giving you a property of equivalent value to you, if you like. If they're taking a wooden house off you, in a city suburb, they should be giving you back a wooden house in an inner city suburb that you can fit into in the same type of area that you came from.
I understand, and I think a lot of people would agree with you, Ken, but what if, say, you're about to retire and move somewhere else?
No, there's no what ifs. It's the way it is at the time of the acquisition.
So what if you're about to sell your house?
Then, well, nothing wrong with just selling your house. You're allowed to sell your house. If you're allowed to sell your house, then sell your house. If you're not allowed to sell it, you're not allowed to sell it. Depends on what the circumstances is at the time that you've...
All righty, Ken. Yeah, Anton?
Yeah, well, if I can suggest, there's a way, and we're looking at down the barrel at this, there's a way to actually provide a choice. And Ken makes a very good point that... Mm-hmm. In many circumstances, it should be like for like. And part of the problem is like for like is not always affordable, especially in these escalating property prices. So it is nice to have legislation that will allow for that. Of course, if it forces you, then it raises the issues you've just said. So in an ideal world, we'd have the two choices available. The difficulty, of course, is determining what's like for like. And it's not a simple process, but I think it's certainly one that we ought to be looking at having as an alternative just to monetary compensation.
All right.
So being able to be given a house or a house bought for you, essentially, that is similar to what you've lost.
But that should be the choice of the person whose house has been compulsorily acquired. You might be desperate to sell your house. You might be like the before picture on the Selling Houses Australia. I don't know if you watch it, but gee, I love that show. And, you know, where people can't sell their house for whatever reason, and now here's a chance, oh, someone's going to come along and buy it.
It's usually a draconian piece of legislation that takes something off you and it takes away your power to choose the timing and the way you do it. However, you're absolutely right that there are occasions where it can be a benefit. And on very rare occasion, I've had clients who've benefited for the very reason you've said. They've been looking to sell, it's been compulsory acquired, and as a result, they get things they wouldn't normally get because they wouldn't normally pay for it. So, for instance, they have the advice and other heads of claim, which normally you wouldn't get. Normally you just get a buyer who'll pay a certain amount and you pay your own conveyancing, and that's pretty much the long and short of it, as well as your own marketing costs and your own commissions to the agent, etc.
Okay. 1-300-800-222. Anton Dunhill from Hunt & Hunt is our guest this morning. 1-300-800-222. Dan rang to say he had a friend who took his case to the High Court. It did not turn out like the castle, and it cost him $500,000. So unless you've got, you know, a QC willing to do your work for you for nothing, it is going to cost a lot of money. John, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Rod and Anton. And thank you very much, Rod, for your program.
That's all right.
Yeah, look, I got a property in Perth, and when we bought it, there was a beautiful, it was called a green zone on paper beside the house. It was a major reason for buying the house, and you know, knowing that there was never going to be anything developed or built next door. And within a few months of moving in, we were the first people to move into the house. I didn't build it, but it was built before I moved in. And basically, there was surveyors' pegs within a few months, and then realised things were starting to be pushed over, like trees and things like that. And basically what we were told, the council or the shire told us that, yes, it was a green zone and there's nothing ever going to be put there. And what has ended up being put in there is about 10 two-storey homes west houses.
Right, okay.
So instead of looking out my windows and seeing, like, blue sky and trees and that, now there's sandstone walls. But ironically, my property has increased quite nicely in the time I've lived there.
Right, okay. Well, there is an advantage there. John, thank you very much. I'll get Anton to comment. Once again, I'll say that we're talking of a general nature, but... I mean, what recourse is there if you are told by government or council that nothing else is going to go there and then they change their mind?
Very interesting question. Firstly, that actually steps outside compulsory acquisition because it's quite a narrow field. What you're talking about there is planning law. Now, it's actually different in the different states, and I've got counterparts in Western Australia who deal with this sort of thing. But the reality is it's much harder to deal with because you have to fund your own fight. Now, that might be lawyers, that might be planners, there might be other people involved who help you, as well as people literally walking around door knocking and talking to their councillors and the like. But this is about a city and a council and other government bodies making decisions about what's best for a community and adapting to it. And obviously those decisions aren't always going to be popular and they aren't always going to be correct. But the way you get around that is through the various planning law avenues, as well as looking at administrative law sometimes where you can review decisions made by government.
Except that developers have more money than individuals.
Well, developers have a better vested interest in spending money to try and earn the money they're looking to do. So it's certainly very difficult for an individual, but we've seen many occasions where developers have been unsuccessful and individuals have been successful in fighting various types of buildings, especially height restrictions and how far it encroaches and the like.
Can I just say that generally it seems as though governments, have a fairly long-term view that maybe, 20, 30 years out from building roads or whatever, they know where they're going to go, and people should be informed or be able to be informed that if there is a large area that is undeveloped near your house, you'll know if there's a freeway or something being planned for it.
Well, a freeway you should know about, because normally what you'd have is the blight I was talking about earlier, that overlay. So usually you'd expect that there'd be the promise that something might come and then the blight, which indicates it likely will. Of course, they can be put on a property and stay on there for a long time. I have clients where properties were there since 1955 and haven't been removed, and that's because one day they're planning to build it. There are also other reasons why they wouldn't remove a blight. But what you say is absolutely right, but everything's a double-edged sword. If you put a blight like that on a property or you say that things will or won't be built, it'll also have a negative effect on value.
Yeah.
So it works certainly both ways. That's why each time you need to look at your particular situation and see if you can use the law to help.
All right. Okay, let's talk to Tina. Good morning, Tina.
Yes, I think this might be related to the blight. I was looking for properties in the 70s, and they'd say DMR affected. You'd get some warning, and they'd usually be cheaper properties, but you knew. But I don't notice that sort of advertising now.
That's a very good point. But Tina, thank you very much for that. And I know, my brother, my sister and brother-in-law used to live in a house that had a very large, wide green sward nearby that, they said, oh, well, maybe they'll build one day. The road's never been built, but, who knows? It might be 20 years in the future.
In fact, the comment that was just made does happen, and I can think of a number of occasions, probably one that jumps out the most, where we helped a client to sell a property that was affected by one of these blights because there's a future freeway on part of the property, and it was semi-rural land, so it didn't really affect the house right now. In the future, it certainly won't be ideal. The purchasers, who I certainly was interested to understand their motivation, were delighted because it brought the property price to a level they could afford, and they didn't have to worry about this future acquisition until 10-odd years from now.
Okay.
From their point of view, it allowed them to buy into something. So we had that as part of the marketing campaign. And what you want to do is make sure that they're paying as much as you can get from them, given it's affected, And then, of course, there's the loss on sale claim. So our client was able to claim the difference between that and the theoretical unaffected value.
Interesting.
So it worked out quite well for everybody. Oh. Of course, the people who buy it do have some limitations in the future as to what compensation they can get, because they're not allowed to double dip.
All right.
In other words, you buy it, you shouldn't be getting that money back again.
Exactly. All right, no worries. Anton Dunhill is our guest. We're talking about compulsory acquisition. 1-300-800-222. You can text 0467-922-702. This is an interesting one. Peter, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Tell me what happened. This is not compulsory acquisition, it's rezoning, is it?
Rezoning, yeah. We bought a property in the late 70s, which was four blocks of land on one title, basically. And sometime through the period that we owned it, they rezoned two of the blocks, E2. Then we tried to develop an application on it, and the council admitted that was an anomaly. Now we're trying to get that changed. I sort of wonder what our rights are, because if we tread too hard, the council will say, oh, we'll acquire it.
Once again, I will point out that anything Anton says is of a general nature only, but what happens when half your property is in, you know, being involved? That must be dreadful, Anton.
Well, indeed, it can make life difficult. If anybody makes a machination, a motion or a discussion or even a hint that there's going to be some kind of acquisition, just like we heard now, then my view is I ought to become involved, because we're talking about the potential for a compulsory acquisition. And governments and their various bodies need to act appropriately in that regard, and we need to know how much and how it's going to work and what time frame and the rest. So the long and short on something like that is, normally I'd get involved in a matter like that, and I would get into the detail of whether it's an acquisition, whether it's a possible acquisition or not. Because what we've heard there is...
Hang on. Sorry, Peter.
Can I just add something? Yeah. They have said they'll rezone it back to what it was originally.
Right.
But we sort of get nothing from them. They just say that, but that's about the end of it. We don't get any activity. How do you push them along? Do we just have to employ lawyers, do we?
Well, lawyers or planners, depending on the particular circumstances. But I would normally suggest at least making inquiries and deciding if that's right for you. I'm not saying that in every circumstance they're going to be able to help you and that it'll do much good. I have the heartbreaking role of occasionally telling people, look, I'm really glad you came in. I'm so glad to meet you, spending an hour or two with you, but I won't be able to help you in a commercial way. So, take this as free help, essentially, and, I wish you the best of luck.
Okay.
My hope is for you that wouldn't apply to your situation.
Is a rural council, is it, Peter?
No, that's in the city council.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. All right, fair enough. Well, good luck with it. The thing to do, Anton, is what you're saying, is you need, or would it help to get something in writing from the council or to get them to actually rezone it back to the way it was?
No, not necessarily. What helps is speaking to someone who understands what to do, who is acting for you. That's why I suggested a lawyer.
Go and see a lawyer. Okay.
Or if there's someone you know that's in your family that understands and deals with these things and you trust them, that's up to you. I mean, as a lawyer, I'm obviously a bit more conservative, and I suggest someone who understands the legalities.
Okay.
But even a planner can be very helpful with planning. You'd want to be careful what you ask a council to do for you.
Right.
Be careful what you wish for. Sometimes you're going to get it, and then later you come to someone like me, and we're going to regret that it happened.
Okay, Sue says, a bypass is being built very close to her home, skimming very close to settlements at Horsham in Western Victoria. Instead of going into farmlands, is there anything a small community can do?
Well, I think we've seen that larger communities with a bit of furor can do quite a lot. East West Link is a great example. There's a lot you can do in terms of planning and the like, but knowing about that, we're talking about Vic Roads. Now, Vic Roads has to determine what the most appropriate thing is for the Horsham bypass. So I know about that, obviously, being in Victoria, and I had clients that are affected by that. And they basically go through a number of different proposals. There are ways you can put pressure and you can make applications and the like to do something about it. But the issue is, where is it up to? And is it going to affect that property? And more importantly, what is this person trying to do right now? Are they looking to sell? Are they looking to stay? Are they actually affected or are they not? And one of the difficulties that is also heartbreaking is if you are not affected by a compulsory acquisition on your land, but it's near you, then our law doesn't provide for protection. not in that way. There are very few exceptions to that, to do with road closures and the like, but generally speaking, you're not provided protection under compulsory acquisition law if they don't take at least one square millimetre of your property,
okay,
which is different to some of the rest of the world.
All right. Barry says, is there any way to find out about future building projects?
Yes. Look, you really should be talking to councils, planners, lawyers, conveyancers. So if you're, for instance, looking to buy a property, you'd want to find out as much as you can about the local area.
So go to your local council and ask them, and they are duty-bound to tell you, surely.
Well, indeed. But they may or may not know everything that you want to know. But it certainly can help. Usually what you do is get the person who's doing your conveyance to do that sort of work.
Okay.
It'll cost you more, but it'll save you in the long run.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. Andrew, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks very much. It's a very interesting program.
Thank you.
Yes, as far as this business is concerned, I find it rather incredible that the government makes everything so impossible to follow and understand and complicated for people. And I don't really feel there's any need for that. That's in a lot of other cases and situations either. But what I do make of it is I find the whole scenario very unjust. Now, for example, you said quite clearly, they can come knocking on your door, no ifs and buts, we're taking you home and we're paying you what we think for it. Now, let me just say that it's all very well for them to come along and insist it's going to happen, but I guarantee from what you say, you cannot make any insistence that they will agree with about the cost of it you're going to be reimbursed for.
Okay, I'll take that as a comment, Andrew, but I will ask Anton Dunhill, our guest this morning from Hunt & Hunt. You're with Rod Quinn on ABC Local Radio. How much give and take is there once the government says, well, we valued the property at this much, and you say, well, actually, given everything else that's got to be taken into account, we're going to move schools for the kids, whatever, we value it at this much. So how much give and take is there?
There is quite a lot because you're entitled to your own independent advice.
Okay.
That means you get someone like me on board. Yeah, exactly. Someone just like me who knows this industry, understands what to do. They will almost always engage an independent expert valuer or valuer.
They don't send their own valuers along.
You mean, for instance, myself?
No, government.
Government. Yeah, the government does that, and they'll often have to have two valuers,
okay,
the Land Monitor and the Valuer General of Victoria, for instance, that will do the assessments. The problem, of course, is that, like we said before, it's art and science. So sometimes the valuation they give might actually be right, and other times it could be way off.
So hang on, can I just ask, two houses, maybe terrace houses or whatever, right next to each other, might be valued differently because of the different number of people living there and the different disruption to their lives?
That would be other heads of claim. So the market value shouldn't change if they're identical in that hypothetical situation, but there'll be other heads of claim. So I'm glad you brought up school, for instance. I've fought pretty hard in the past to get things like, even for a tenant who was kicked out by a regional rail link, to get new school uniforms for the new school. So there's an item in your head of claim called disturbance, and it's designed to give you the financial assistance for things that are a natural, direct and reasonable consequence of the acquisition.
All right. Just a text from Peter in Horsham. He says, has the Horsham bypass been confirmed where it is going?
Well, I'd need to talk to individuals about that. Okay. So I wouldn't want to talk in the main about it. Unfortunately, I asked for a variety of different people who are affected by it and who were proposed to be affected. So I'd be more than happy to answer any direct questions.
I think Peter wanted to know whether or not the final decision has been made about where it's going, and you're saying that that hasn't been. That's not the case.
No, I don't believe it is, but I'd have to double check my most recent file notes on that. I haven't spoken very recently to my clients in the area, so I need to check. But as I recall it, there were quite a number of different options, and those options were narrowed down. And where we're up to now, I'd have to look in.
All right, no worries then. Okay, so Peter, the answer we think might be no. Peter, another Peter is with us. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Friends of mine have been advised that there's almost a road is literally going through their property. The issue is, it appears that it's going to take like 40% in the middle, and they are quite happy to pay and do all the valuations on that. But the remaining 20%, which is now separated by the road from the original property and homestead, the value of that will change drastically.
Yes.
And suitable use. But the issue is there's no, doesn't appear to be compensation for that.
Okay, that's interesting, Peter. Thanks very much for that. Anton, that might come under what you were talking about before, but, I mean, you see plenty of properties with roads going through them. However, I mean, that's going to make it very difficult to for that property.
Well, indeed, but I'd expect... That doesn't sound quite right. Now, there might be reasons, there might be different parcels, but if you've got property affected, there's a diminution of value in the property that is the balance of the property. There's severance, which is much like it sounds, severing parts of the property. Sometimes you get it split in twain, and other times it's the corner that gets taken. And you've got adjoining properties that might be affected, as well as other issues like if you've got a rural property, for instance, you might be running a business, in which case that can fall within the whole purview of your claim. So I don't know whether there's a specific reason in that circumstance why they're excluded, but I'm surprised to hear it, given the description we just got.
All right, Peter. I mean, do you know why it's happening like that?
Well, it may be a misunderstanding from my point of view, but the indications were they still owned that other property, part of the property, but couldn't utilise it to the normal value that they were with livestock and access.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, otherwise you've got the cows wandering across a road or something.
That sounds like a claim I'd expect to be able to make in the general, but I'd have to know the specifics. What does the lawyer say?
Yes, that's right. And once again, we say that the what we're talking about now is of a general nature. And, of course, if you have a specific situation, consult somebody who knows about that case. Sue, good morning.
Good morning. We have a semi-rural property in Queensland, and we bought knowing we had an industrial overlay on it. Unfortunately, what is affecting our property is that we have a creek which is fed by stormwater drains, and we are affected by the water that comes down from the city, and it's affecting our access. Now, for the industrial overlay to be triggered, we need to put a huge bridge in, but we also have an issue with the water from the city washing a bridge in, but for the industrial overlay to be put into place, it's a sizable bridge that has to carry trucks. Where for our private use, we've got a bridge, but it's getting eroded either side, and we've sort of talked, you know, maybe acquisition, you know, or some sort of compensation for us.
Right. Okay. Now, that is a very, very specific case, Sue, and we can't deal with it exactly, but Anton, any thoughts on that?
It sounds like a complicated case where we need to understand the planning and the acquisition issues, as well as what's proposed and what you need. This is something that's right for my counterparts or an appropriate lawyer in Queensland.
Okay. Sorry about that, Sue. Ian's our last caller. G'day, Ian.
Yes, good morning all. Anton, a quick one, very similar, I suppose, in respect to what we've heard before, but my grandparents passed away and left the house to my mother and her brother.
Yeah.
My mother and my uncle.
Yes,
my
your mother's brother, yeah.
Yeah, my uncle subsequently bought my mother out 50% at the then's current market value. Some years later, he decided to sell and was told that 5 metres off the front of the property was to be shaved off to widen a road to a major hospital. Now, he sold that at auction that was noted. The price was not very, very good, but now, some years later, that road never got widened, never went ahead.
Is there
limitations on that?
That is a very interesting case, and again, very specific. So, Ian, I will say we can't talk specifically about that, but what's the recourse in a situation like that, Anton?
Well, there are so many individual legal steps that will sound different for Ian, but a lawyer would want to know. We'd want to understand how it was sold, what the nature of the transfer was, how, if I understood correctly, there was advertising, what happened there.
Yeah.
We'd want to understand, was there a blight on the property? Is the blight still there? Was there a claim? Are you statute barred because it's too late? there are so many questions that come out of it. Again, that's something you'd want to get very specific about. And it's the kind of question I field all the time in my practice, where people come in, they explain some of these circumstances. If I can see blatantly there's nothing can be done, I'll say so. If I'm not sure, then we'll look into it and figure out if it can. And if it can, wonderful, we're able to help them. And if it's under compulsory acquisition, it doesn't cost out of the claimant's pocket. But if it's not, if it's planning law, the person has to make a decision, do they want to have that fight, because it will cost them out of their pocket.
Okay, just on something like that, when it's only 5 metres of a property, but obviously it affects the value of the entire property, is there compensation paid there?
Absolutely. 1 square millimetre, you should be entitled to a compensation claim. The question is, are they entitled in these circumstances? You know, has the time passed? Was there ability to do it? Was it this blight, which means a loss on sale by the sounds of things? Or is there an actual notice, in which case, what if the land was taken, there should have been a whole formal process with the value taken. And just to be clear, I'm not a qualified valuer, but in my experience, frequently the front of the property is the more valuable per square metre.
Yeah. In the back, yeah. So, Ian, I suppose the advice there is see a lawyer who specialises in this. Anton Dunhill, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I really have learnt so much this morning, and thank you so much for giving up your time this morning to talk to us.
Thanks very much, Rod. It was a pleasure.